Are you sure you want to stay here? It looks creepy.
But Savannah, this is the House of Mystery. Let's see, the brochure says true crime, conspiracy, alternate history, all rooms right here in the house.
I don't know, which room is ours?
Yes, this may be our room. Oh, well, sorry, ma'am. Obviously, this is not our room.
Ah, here's our room. True crime.
You've now entered the House of Mystery on KYAH. Utah's Talk Authority with your hosts, Al Warren and Kev Thompson. Also, Julie Saville with the Paranormal Report. The True Crime Commentary by Stephen David Lampley. And Dr. Joseph Usensky's Conspiracy Countdown.
Hello and welcome to the House of Mystery. And I am really pleased this evening because I am able to welcome back a guest that I've interviewed on my own show some time ago on the Julie Saville Show. And that's Mark Anthony, who is known as the Psychic Lawyer. Now, Mark has an amazing history, and I'm not going to try and discuss that. I'm going to let Mark explain himself in terms of his background and how he's got to be known as the Psychic Lawyer. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you, Julie. It's great to be back on your show, and to all the listeners and KKNW, and I understand there's several other stations that are now subscribing to the show. Thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome. We've missed you. It seems like it's been forever.
It does. Well, I've been very, very busy. Last year, I did a nationwide speaking tour. And then this year, I'm getting ready to kick off another nationwide speaking tour. I'll be starting it off in the Palm Beaches in Florida, at the United Metaphysical Church of the Palm Beaches, and then I'll be heading to the Unity Church of Naples. So all that's on my website, evidenceofeternity.com. And I'm in the beginning phases of my next book, so that's keeping me busy. And it looks like we've got personal and TV appearances lined up for the whole year. And, you know, Julie, one of the best things is that it looks like I will be in Seattle in early September around Labor Day. I've been invited to be one of the keynote speakers at the IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies annual conference, which this year is going to be in Seattle. So I'm hoping to come in studio at KKNW and do the show from there.
That's fantastic news. We were just talking earlier, some of the presenters, saying that we need to get together next year and all meet up somewhere. So there's a great opportunity right there. Because since I last spoke to yourself, Mark, I've relocated from the UK to Cyprus.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's funny how where our paths take us. Then we really look forward to having you in the studio. And I so wish I could get there. And I will hope and aim to do so. So for the purpose of our listeners, some of which are going to be new listeners, they may not have heard an interview with you before, tell us a little about who is Mark Anthony.
It's funny because a lot of people, when I first started going public with my mediumship, I was at a conference in New York, and I was on the air, and they introduced me as Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, and that stuck. I am a fourth-generation psychic medium. Both of my parents had psychic and mediumistic abilities, and it runs on both sides of the family for generations. So I was born into this metaphysical family. Around age 3, 4, I started seeing spirits. I had a near-death experience, which was very harrowing. And as I got older, I was, you know, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I had considered becoming a priest. And so I was always drawn toward the spiritual, but I found it too limiting. And my mother, who was a medium, she and I used to talk about this, and it, with, you know, no insult intended toward any religion, we just found that dogma was too restricting, because spirituality and God have no limits. But I figured too many rules and regulations in the Catholic Church, so I ended up going to law school instead. Not that there's rules and regulations there, and quite a few, actually. So I have practiced in the fields of being a prosecutor, a criminal defense lawyer, a personal injury, wrongful death litigator, and now I am a full-time public speaker and medium, and I still appear on radio and television as an analyst in high-profile legal cases, and I'm also a consultant in cold cases and murders, where I communicate with the spirits of the victim and the victims to help the police develop leads. And I've got two best-selling books out, Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity, which are now in multiple languages. They're in, half a dozen languages at least. So that's me in a nutshell. And I'm always on tour, and I love it because it's so nice to meet people all across the country, all across the world, and do my very best to help them cope with the death of a loved one.
So how does your mediumship manifest? Because as mediums, we all seem to receive information in slightly different ways, although we might describe it quite similarly. How do you receive information?
I always love being interviewed by fellow mediums because you get it. Because a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't understand. Energetically, we all receive information the same way. And then it's one of the things I talk about is quantum consciousness, how quantum physics proves not only the existence of the afterlife and the soul, but also how spirit communication works. I refer to what you and I do, Julie, as interdimensional communication. And what that means is, as Einstein said, there's no matter, there's just energy which vibrates at different frequencies. And our frequency, I call the dimension we live in, the material world, because we're at a lower, slower frequency. And the other side is the other side, and there's, you know, several levels to it. So what I do and what you do is we bring our brainwave frequency up to a higher vibration. Spirits are aware of this. They bring theirs down, and we get a frequency match. It's just like tuning into a radio station, like tuning into KKNW. You're trying to get it on the dial and make it some, and all of a sudden you get the right station, and there's the connect. Yep. And so what the spirits do, being an electromagnetic coherent field, okay, now physicists are now referring to what you and I in the realm of faith call a spirit or a soul as a quantum electromagnetic field. In the realm of psychology, it's referred to as the consciousness. That's why I call it quantum consciousness. So spirits emit waves of frequency to us, and within those waves are tremendous amounts of information. Their electrical field then interfaces with the electrical field in our brain and takes that impulse and turns it into recognizable concepts based on our memories, feelings, and cultural associations. So when a spirit communicates with me, first I'll get a gender, then I start getting information. I may get a visual on what they look like generally prior to the passing, because these are all identifiers. And then I will see things, hear things, feel things, know things, taste, smell. So I get this whole body-mind stimulus, and each impulse is a piece of information which helps to describe and define the identity of the spirit or group of spirits communicating. And then once we lock onto each other, they're going to start, they start juicing me with more information, so then I can give you meaningful messages from them about your relationship with them, resolving issues, and what's going on in your life.
I absolutely love that whole analysis, because for me, I think I've shared with you before, my mediumship was I was quite spiritual without being a spiritualist. I saw things, I felt things, but couldn't really make sense of them. I had a period of my life where I didn't have anything at all, where I think my guides allowed me to be a young mum and deal with the complexities that life, you know, brings to that scenario. And then all of a sudden, when my kids were more resilient, it switched on. And it switched on very much overnight, and I went to bed that night and then woke up the next morning and went, ah, that's mediumship, and just accepted it. There was no real challenge. But do I talk the same way in terms of the kind of frequencies? No, I don't really know how I get the information. I just get the information. And when I read some biographies and I heard another medium say, this comes to us like a thought and we have to make sense of it and we have to differentiate it from our own thought processes, I thought, oh my word, there are other people feeling this the same way as I am. This is something that just we can't, it's almost like a knowing, quite a strange feeling.
Absolutely. And I think it's manifest differently to everybody. I describe it in the way that I understand it because I'm interested in the technical aspects of it. And some people are more visual in the messages they receive. Some are more auditory, and some are more feeling about it. And you can get accurate information in any of those fields. And then, like with me, I get it all the above, and which can be very, very interesting. It's also very exhausting. You know, a lot of people, it's funny, wherever I go, people come up to me, do you see anyone around me? Well, that's assuming that I'm open 24/7 spiritually.
Absolutely.
Right, because it is so exhausting and draining, you don't want to do that because it denigrates the quality of your contact when you are doing it in earnest. I prefer to, like, turn it on and then turn it off because it also helps you get to sleep at night. I mean, if you're open all the time and spirits are constantly bombarding you because they don't have to sleep. Spirits are pure energy. They don't have to sleep. They don't get old. They don't get tired. They don't get sick. They want to talk to us. But it's better to define the parameters of the contact and let them know I'm doing this or I'm not doing this. I mean, I was at the dentist, and I had a root canal, which was a pretty unpleasant experience. And I come out, and I'm all swollen, and the young lady behind the counter, she's so sweet, but she goes, is there anyone around me? And I remember saying, sweetheart, I just had a hole drilled in my head. I ain't saying nothing right now. I'm going to go home and lie down. And she was laughing. So yes, we're not like Pez dispensers that go around just flinging messages all the time. It doesn't quite work that way. And so when we do a reading, and I'm pretty sure it's the same way with you, at the conclusion of the reading, it is fairly draining physically and mentally, and we need some time to recharge.
I remember I'm going to use the term baby medium, and I'm not sure wherever an adult medium, but I certainly was in very early days, and I was doing a recce of a museum that we were going to do a paranormal investigation in, and this receptionist said, oh, you know, please come and tell me something. Tell me something about me and my family. And I said, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm doing a recce. We're recording this bit as well, and it's quite important that I concentrate on what I'm doing. She said, oh, no, please. And she carried on. Every time I went past, she kind of asked me. And as I was a baby, so I was quite uncontrolled. And I was telling her about this dog that I could see. She said, no, it doesn't really make sense. And I said, oh, it's definitely a dog. It's around you. I gave the age of the dog, how long she'd had the dog for. And she said, well, it's fitting, yes, but the dog's alive. And then it suddenly dawned on me. And my friend looked at me and she just said, you need to go because I'd basically informed her that her dog had just passed without even meaning to. It was purely by this kind of raw and uncontrolled messages coming through. And I never forget that. And I always remember the lessons that I learned from that about, you know, clearly thinking what comes out of my mouth and when, but more than that, being able to control the channel from spirit voice to myself, and making sure I was the person in control, not them.
And that's a very good point, Julie, is that people think that we conjure and summon spirits. The reason I talk about frequency and it's like, you know, tapping into a radio station is because for all intents and purposes, we're radios. And so what we do is all of a sudden we open up and we pick up on the vibrations and the information which is being transmitted to us. Now, spirits also know that if I'm doing a reading for somebody, that, in other words, let's say I'm doing a reading for Jane Smith. The spirits associated with Jane Smith know that she's going to get a reading, so they're going to come in because they want to talk to her. And occasionally somebody will come through that the person may not recognize. I love when people say we're cold reading, which means, you know, we're looking for verbal and visual clues and making it up. And then number two, that if we're not doing that, then we're reading their minds. Well, yesterday I did a reading for a lady, and it was over the telephone, okay? And her mother came through, and several spirits came through, but her mother's spirit came through, and then a woman came in next to her mother, an elegant-looking lady who was playing croquet and kept giving me the name Barbara. And the client said, well, my mother's name wasn't Barbara. I've already gotten her name. And my mother didn't play croquet, so this makes absolutely no sense. But the client was very good. She says, I'm going to make a note of this. She goes, I don't recognize this. Maybe it'll make sense some other time.
Absolutely.
I got an email from her this morning, and she showed her notes to her sister. And her sister said, oh, my gosh, Mom had a friend named Barbara, and after Mom died, I used to play croquet with Barbara, and Barbara died like about a year ago. And the person I was doing the reading for never met Barbara, didn't know anything about her. So, number one, how am I cold reading her name and the fact that this lady played croquet and how she died? And number two, if I was reading her mind, how do I do it over the telephone? And secondly, how could I read something that wasn't even in her mind to begin with, since she had no knowledge of this person? And we all have several, we meaning mediums, have several examples of when things like this happen. You know, people think, oh, you're just cold reading. You know, yeah, your grandmother's around and she loves you. Yeah, well, I was doing a reading for somebody once and her grandmother came through and I said, wow, your grandmother was a real wild lady, and she's talking about burning down some house. And the client started laughing. She goes, yeah, my grandmother, she drank a lot, and when men used to tick her off, there's one guy in particular, she burned his house down. So, doesn't quite fit the granny knitting the quilt and baking cookies stereotype of a grandmother.
I remember when I first went to demonstrations, and people said to me, you know, in order to focus and to channel, you know, try demonstrations in spiritualist churches, go and give it a go, you know, don't hide in the shadows, get up there and do it. And I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. And I remember standing at the front of this spiritualist church, and all I could see was a, in the UK we have a cartoon called Postman Pat. It's a children's television program, and Pat, the postman, goes round with his cat and his little van delivering the letters and parcels to the people in the village. So all I could see was this postman Pat, and I kept saying to the congregation, you know, this is what I'm being given. Is there anybody that can relate to this? Nobody can relate to it. And I thought, this is not helpful. It's not specific enough. And I couldn't understand why Spirit were giving me something so vague that nobody could take. It was like being a very, very poor comedian on stage waiting to have things thrown at them. And then I said, well, this is no good. Nobody's taking this. It's not okay. And I want you to help me with this. This is no good putting me in front of everybody and then not giving me the information. And somebody in the audience, all of a sudden I saw a picture of myself that morning in my mind opening a utility bill, a gas bill. So I said to the audience, who's opened a gas bill this morning? And this person said, yeah, that's me. I said, what's significant about that? And he said, we don't have gas in our house. We have oil. I said, okay. I said, so we've got the post. Who's Pat? He said, oh, that's my friend who sat next to me. So we had post, we had the man, and we had Pat, which was exactly the name of the cartoon that I was seeing. And I think from that I learned the spirit come to us in so many different ways, and they test us with so many different types of communication. You know, sometimes that's really hard for us to absolutely pinpoint something. And at other times, we can stand in front of an audience, and I remember somebody saying to me, "You're not coming to me, it's not me, it's the wrong person." I said, "No, it isn't, because you bank with this bank." And they said, "Yes, I do." "But you are 197 points so-and-so overdrawn." They were like, "Oh my word, how did you know that?" Because the reading is for you. So it can be so specific, can't it, that information, and yet so vague at other times.
It can, and it depends a lot of times on, there are several factors that it depends on. Sometimes, you know, we just may not be having a good day. I mean, you just may not feel well, okay, but that's on the low end of the influence scale. Sometimes the spirits, they communicate from the other side very much like they did when they were here. If they're loud and boisterous in here, I call them the New York spirits. If they're in your face and want to tell you everything, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I love them because they are super communicative. Then there's your Midwestern spirits who are kind of slow in their delivery, and they tend to be polite. You know what I'm saying? It's like they may be slower. And then if you get somebody who is shy in life, they may be slower to communicate with the information. And then you have difficulty with the client. Now, when I do a reading, I ask the client two questions. Do you recognize this, or does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm cold reading or fishing for information. It's that information, images, sensations are transmitted to me, and I want to make sure that I'm getting it correctly. Recently, I was doing a reading for a woman. Her son's spirit came through, and I kept seeing pickles, jars and jars of pickles. I go, do pickles make any sense? No. Are you sure? No. Are you positive? No. It's like she was, no, no, no. I go, ma'am, he's showing me pickles and pickles, and all I'm seeing are jars and vats and buckets of pickles. No. And then she goes, well, I live across the street from a pickle factory where they put pickles in jars, but that makes no sense. I go, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. She goes, well, my son didn't know that. We moved here after he died. I go, well, that's exactly the point. No, it isn't. She sat there and argued with me for 10 minutes. Why that didn't make sense, and finally said, ma'am, I do not just fling random condiments out hoping to get a hit. I don't know that you live across the street from a pickle factory, but your son does. Well, how does he know? And thank God, dear God. You know, finally her brother said to her, he goes, he's right about the pickles, okay? And then finally the client started to get it, that spirits, and I, you know, even though I explain this, they know things. That they know things now that they did not when they were here. They will bring up things that happened after they passed, people that they never met in this world.
But that's where and the validation comes in, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the validation. But sitting there and arguing with me that pickles don't make any sense when you live across the street from a pickle factory. Now, then people say, oh, well, you Googled me before the reading. I'm certain, and I don't Google people, but if I did, if I Googled her, would it say she lives across the street from a pickle factory? I think not.
Sure, I Google this. And people really do believe that we are that A, we have the inclination to Google people first, B, the intention and the motivation to do that. I couldn't, there's no way in the world I've got the time, the energy or the inclination to start Googling people before they come to a reading. And what would I be achieving? I would just be cheating myself and the spirit world. And I have
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just have no need to do it. You know, as much rather, even if sometimes a reading is more difficult than others, but I'd rather that than be fake.
Well, first off, I would not do that, okay? And I've heard people say, well, I'm not going to do a reading with you because you're a lawyer and you could hire a private investigator to find. It's like, if I did, you ever hire a private investigator? When I was practicing law, I did. If so, my fee for doing a reading would be about $5,000, okay, because they got to hire the private investigator to do this whole dossier on you, and then I have to memorize it, okay? So first off, that's nonsense. Secondly, as a member of the United States Supreme Court Bar, Florida Bar, and Washington, D.C. Bar, because, yes, I am a legitimate attorney, they frown very heavily on fraud. A couple really snotty people have written on my social media, oh, this guy should get disbarred. Does the Florida Bar know what he's doing? Well, yes, they do, because I'm on national television as an attorney and as a psychic medium. And what people also have to realize is we still do have separation of church and state in this country, and I don't think it is legal for a bar association to criticize me because of my spiritual and religious beliefs. I mean, that would be like telling a lawyer you can't practice law because you're Jewish. Yeah, let's see that happen. Okay? I mean, it's just...
I've had this same conversation throughout my social work career. I'm a children's social worker. I manage social workers. I have been in social work for 18 years. I am considered a subject matter expert in child protection. And the question I'm asked when people realize is it true that you're a medium? Is it true that you're on social media as a medium? Is it true that you're practicing? Is it true that you are on the radio? Well, I don't practice where I work because I understand the difficulties. And I don't want to challenge the difficulties at this point. But that's a religious view, or it could be construed as a religious view. So if I said to somebody, well, I'm a spiritualist, and therefore I believe in life after death, therefore I believe in communication with the afterlife, how could somebody judge me in a social work term based on my religious view when social work is all about encompassing difference?
And social work is about helping people and showing kindness, compassion, and
Absolutely.
Understanding.
The religious view is not... It should make absolutely no difference, because whether you employ a spiritualist or somebody who is, I don't know, I'm trying to think now, or who conducts Islam or Christianity or Judaism, it doesn't matter. As long as they're a job.
Well, the point, what we do as mediums is we provide evidence for the afterlife. That's what evidential mediumship is all about. Anyone can say to somebody, oh, you have a grandmother who died? Yes, she's around you and she loves you. She's watching over you. Well, great. Anybody could say that because most people's grandmothers love them. Okay? I remember there was a toy store when I was a little kid and it had a sign in the window, if you see something you like, tell your grandmother. Okay? Because your grandmother would, you know, always indulge and spoil you. But what we do is, because of there's something slightly different about our brains, we believe it focuses on the pineal gland in the brain, which has calcite and magnetite crystals in it, and generates an electromagnetic field. In other words, we have a radio station, an antenna in our head, which regulates our brainwave frequency, and when it goes to a higher level, spirits interface with that, transmit us information. So as mediums, we're able to bring forth pieces of information about spirits that we could not possibly know or guess, even things that the person did not know about the person, the spirit who's communicating. And so that's why mediums exist, why these abilities exist, because it all comes down to physics. And as Nikola Tesla said, he said that what one man calls God, another calls the laws of physics. So what we're seeing is on a subatomic level. We all know from science that everything's made of molecules, which are made of atoms, which are composed of electrons, protons, and neutrons. And on a smaller level, they are composed of an electromagnetic particle called quanta, ergo quantum physics and particle physics. So everything is made of that, Julie. You, me, the radio waves that are broadcasting this message, the air we're breathing, the earth, the sun, the constellations, I mean, everything is made of the same basic unit of energy. And so when people die, the energy, the electromagnetic field in their body simply slipstreams into this other frequency, this higher frequency. yet is still energy. And what we're doing is we're picking up on the vibrations from that higher frequency, so we're carrying on a conversation with people who may have physically died, but in reality and in all truth have not died. And this is not philosophy. This is not sliding down a rainbow on our unicorn into the Republic of Kumbaya. This is physics. And this is why I refer to our soul as quantum consciousness, because it is proving that consciousness is not localized. It is not created by the brain. It's merely housed in the brain, like a computer hard drive houses an operating system and data. And when the operating system, or rather when the hard drive crashes, that gets uploaded to the cloud, a.k.a. the other side. So religions and great spiritual teachers have been describing God in terms of light. Well, this is what Einstein and Hawking and Heisenberg and Max Planck, all the great physicists, Carl Sagan, were talking about. Light is both particles and waves. And so our ability to perceive the higher power, the interconnectedness between everything, is based on light. And so Krishna talked about seeing the light. Buddha talked about finding the way to the light. Judaism talks about the light. What do you think Moses was talking to with the burning bush? Okay, the light. Jesus talked about the light, Muhammad, and so on and so forth. So that is what the light is an acknowledgement of the energy that connects and binds all of us. So religions have been talking about this and referring to this for thousands of years, and the only thing about our understanding now is that we are beginning to prove this through the scientific method. And that's why the premise of my book, Evidence of Eternity, is to bridge the gap between the spiritual and the scientific by showing that they're both interconnected and they're all related and explainable on the basis of physics.
So when we connect with, maybe on stage, if I was to go on stage with you tomorrow and we connect to one person and do a reading, what's happening there?
If we both connect with the same person?
Yeah. So, for example, if we did a, I've done this here in the
I've done it too. Yeah. Well, what we're doing is we're both tuning into the same frequency, okay? So we're tuning into the same frequency, and spirits love it when we do things like this. So once again, there's that quantum electromagnetic interconnectedness with everything, and all we're doing is aligning ourselves with the same frequency. So let's say, you know, Mabel Jones is sitting in the audience, and Mabel's Uncle Harry comes through, and you pick up on Harry and start describing what he did for a living and all this, and then I tune in and I pick up on Harry, and I start picking up other things. And what's really fun when we do, I call it a link, okay, we're in the same link, we may pick up some of the same information, but you're going to pick up maybe some different type things about Harry than I will. And it may be because the male-female balance, or maybe I'll pick up more emotional things and you'll pick up more factual things. But what's going on is Harry's emitting this tremendous amount of frequency to us, and we're both picking up on different bits. And, of course, Mabel's like, woohoo, and, you know, this is all happening. And I've done this on a number of occasions on stage with other mediums. Personally, I like to work alone. But I always welcome the opportunity of working with other talented mediums to do this, because it's important for people to see that when more than one of us can tune into the same entity, that this is then goes from being perhaps a subjective experience to an objective experience. And I think that that's very important to the principles behind evidential mediumship. Using evidence to prove the existence of the afterlife.
Absolutely. I've done some fantastic work with a medium in the UK called Quentin Smith, who we both went to separate areas of the stage. We called somebody up. We made the link and then called somebody up on the stage. They were facing the audience. We were facing the back of the room and completely opposite ends of the stage. And then we both took it in turn to give information. And the only people that could see that person's reaction was the audience, because they were facing them. And it was so fun. It was so, there was so much laughter and so much just relaxed atmosphere. It was lovely. It was nice to make a connection with another medium. Yeah, great times. But at the same time, we then separated and we did different stints ourselves, because we read in different ways. We bring different things to the fore. So, yeah. How often do you work with others, knowing now that you like to work alone? How often do you do that?
A couple times a year. In fact, I've got two events coming up this year where I know I'll be doing that. And one is going to be the Spirit Symposium. We're going to have all that information up on my website shortly. It's going to be August 19th, which is a Sunday, in Carlsbad, California. And I'll be working with the lovely and talented Suzanne Wilson. She's a wonderful medium that I respect. And we're going to be doing a one-day seminar called Love Never Dies, a Spirit Symposium, Love Never Dies. And we're going to take different facets of spirit communication and healing, and then the event will culminate in both of us on stage doing joint readings for people in the audience. So that one's a definite, and probably also at the AREI, Afterlife Research Educational Institute, this August, I will be appearing with other mediums as well.
Well, I haven't had the invite, Mark, so I'm absolutely devastated.
I know. We got to get to there. We got to get to there.
Are you here? It's a two-way process.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your books and you putting your thoughts down in books, because you write so articulately. It's for those people who haven't experienced your writing, they're easy read. It's not that this stuff is complicated. You try and explain it in the best way possible. What's next? What's your next book about?
Well, what I try to do, and thank you for saying about my books, I love physics. So my next book is going to be taking physics even further, how it relates to the afterlife. But nothing is worse. And I remember sitting in law school through classes like civil procedure and basic income taxation and the Uniform Commercial Code. It was like, oh, dear God, you know, because you're literally watching algebra on stage. I mean, it's like it is so dry and so awful. So what I like to do is, and the beauty of having been a trial attorney, is you have to take complex concepts and difficult contractual concepts and things, and put it into everyday language that people can relate to. And so I'll explain that and then illustrate it with a very heartfelt, emotional, and sometimes funny story to bring it home to the reader. So I'm working on expanding physics as the basis for the afterlife, and also showing how spirits are an ever-present force and influence in our lives, and how the reader, how anyone can recognize this and pick up on communication from spirits. Now, a lot of people say, well, why don't you write a how-to book on how to be a medium? Mm-hmm. I don't think that everybody is a medium. I think everybody is capable of a mediumistic experience. Yeah, but not everybody's a medium. And I have seen development classes where there's individuals there and they're just straining and they're just depressed that they just can't do it. And you should never feel bad about yourself for not being able to do something. I mean, I quote Einstein a lot because I love Albert Einstein. He said, everyone's a genius. Just don't expect a fish to climb a tree. I mean, some people are better at things than others. Yeah. You know,
well, some
people are not going to be able to be mediums, just like some people are not going to be able to be guitarists or mathematicians or architects. We're all good at different things.
Absolutely. When it kind of all first switched on for me, I was, although I knew what it was, I still wanted to explore it a bit further, because it was almost like fun. It was quite uncontrolled. I knew what people were doing. I got messages that would tell me what's about to happen, what was happening in somebody's house, the smells, all those things. And it was fun. And then somebody said, well, go and speak to this person and they will give you some insight. So I went to speak to them and she said, oh, I've been attending spiritualist churches for years, trying to get this gift. And I thought, wow, at a time when you were so vulnerable, she'd actually lost a brother who they'd made a pact that whoever crossed over first would make contact with the other. And she'd been trying absolutely desperately to make contact with her brother for so many years. And I thought, how sad is that, that her view is, if you continue to go to development classes, this will just happen. For some people, it never happens. And it's very, very sad.
It is. But, you know, it's like, some people, like, as much as I love physics, I may not be able to, I can understand what the concepts are, but I may not be able to come up with the equation to substantiate something, okay?
Yeah.
And that's okay, because you can understand that something exists and believe in it, but may not be able to do the calculations to get it. It's also like, I love the ocean, and I always wanted to be a scuba diver, but I have an inner ear problem, and I can't do it, okay?
Yeah.
So I know that the coral reefs are there. I know they're beautiful. I would love to experience it, but physically I can't do it, okay? But that doesn't mean it isn't there, and it doesn't mean that other people can't do it. So we just have to accept that sometimes we can maybe have a dream of actually a visitation where a loved one comes in and communicates with us in a coherent fashion. But that doesn't mean the next day you're going to go on tour of the country on stage connecting other people to their loved ones. So it's nothing to be ashamed about, or it's nothing to be worried about. And that's where people like you and me come in. If people want to make the connection, see a legitimate medium and get the connection that way.
How much of what you know, Mark, is from other people? And how much of it is your own informed views due to your experiences?
That would be very difficult for me to quantify, because I've, grew up in a household with people with psychic and mediumistic abilities, so it's very organic to me. And then when I did study in England and then here in the States, it wasn't to turn on my mediumistic ability, it was to learn how to focus it and refine it. So in other words, it's like, I'm sure Michael Phelps, when he was a kid, could swim really well, but he had to go to coaches to learn how to refine his technique to make it get the most efficient use out of it. So I hope that answers the question.
When we learn that we have this ability, as I said, my mum was quite spiritual but not a practicing spiritualist. She was interested in what we would deem to be the paranormal, rather than, we're not talking ghosts, we're talking something out of the realms of what people would say is normal. So I was brought up in that environment. I mean, I first went to see the great Doris Stokes at the age of 12, purely because my mum wasn't able to go. She didn't feel comfortable going when a ticket was purchased for her. So I was incredibly fortunate as a child growing up to be experiencing some aspects of spirituality or mediumship. But as we develop, as we grow older, as we understand the views of others, we start to learn about how others receive information. We start to learn about our own pathway, our own mediumship skills. But we are influenced by others. There are people around us in publicity and in the media eye that we are we're kind of drawn to because we're similar, or we have an understanding with, or we question. So who are your influences?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's a lot of people that I like to observe, and but I, you know, as far as like I would say Edgar Casey was my influence. I think that he was wonderful. I think Helen Duncan, she was a physical medium that of great repute, and actually the last person in Britain convicted under the Anti-Witchcraft Act. Wow, that's a whole story. Certainly Nostradamus. And what I find interesting about Nostradamus, he was kind of the Leonardo da Vinci of the psychic world, because like da Vinci, he was incredibly brilliant and involved in an incredible amount of study, and he had to do it under the radar of the Catholic Church. And then Swedenborg, it was a Swedish medium at the end of the 19th century, who kind of, I think, brought mediumship into the 21st, or rather, to the modern era. And then definitely Arthur Finley, who founded the Arthur Finley College for the Advancement of Psychic Science. And Arthur Finley was also real tight with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. They were really good friends, and we know Sir Arthur as being the author of Sherlock Holmes, but both Sir Arthur and Lady Doyle were mediums, and they had a profound influence on the direction of mediumship from the late 19th into the early 20th century. So those would be the influences and the people that I look up to in the psychic world.
What about present day? Who might you look at today and say, actually, yep, yeah, I'm on that same page?
I don't idolize any of my colleagues, although I respect them. So I guess that's as far as I'm going to go with that.
So taking away the idolizing of, the respecting of, we can respect different people based on how they present, how they be. So, for example, for myself, when I was, I'm going to say this very loosely, learning the ropes. So, again, as I was exploring how Spirit gave me information, I had a huge amount of symbols given to me. It was only when I read some information by Chris Conway and by John Edward that I kind of went, actually, I get that. I understand it. That's how I receive that information. How cool is that? Now it makes sense to me. I can learn from that. Are there individuals that read in the same way as yourself, that you've learned from or been influenced by?
I guess you're going to keep asking me this question until I give you an answer.
I am.
No, I've developed entirely my own unique style. So I don't look at other mediums and say, oh, I need to do it like that, or, oh, they got that, because, you know, I learned a lot from my mother. I learned a lot from being in England, but I learned the most from myself, as opposed to trying to imitate or emulate other mediums.
Okay, so I will leave the question and leave you in your comfort zone. However, I wasn't asking if you emulated other people. I was asking whether there was an influence, whether you respected others more because you read in a similar way, or there was kind of a similarity there in the way you practice. That was all. So I certainly saw that as I was developing. I suddenly realized that the way people were describing things helped me understand the way I was receiving information. It didn't mean that we were on a par. It didn't mean that there was, I idolized that person. It's just the way they described it made sense to me, made me help me find sense in myself. So what's the future for you now, Mark? What are you looking to do next? You've written two amazing books. You've got another one in the pipeline. And for anybody listening, these books are so easy read books. These are good books. These are about, let's look at healing. Let's look at helping you to manage grief. Let's look at helping you into understanding what spirit life is about, and removing that kind of anxiety and that fear around superstition and ghosts and all that kind of thing. So what's the next book?
Well, earlier when I said I'm going to be taking quantum physics to the next level as understanding the afterlife and how people will be able to benefit from the book by recognizing the signs and using their own intuition and intuitive abilities as a key to their own personal and spiritual success. So that's going to be doing there. Plus, I'm going to be on the speaking tour, which launches this weekend in Palm Beach at the United Metaphysical Church of the Palm Beaches. Then I'll be heading to Unity of Naples, and then I'll be headed to Aquarian Dreams in the Melbourne, Florida area. So I'm doing Florida in January, February. Then in March, it looks like I'll probably be back in Texas, and then from there to California. And I know that Washington State and Arizona are all on the list. And we're also thinking that I may be back in New York at some point. Because what's happening, Julie, is we're waiting to hear back from a number of people and venues throughout the country, because my schedule is very fluid, and I may get a call and they say, oh, we need you, you know, at this city in the next, you know, week or so, or in 2 days. So that's why I encourage people to go to my website, evidenceofeternity.com, so that they can follow me on social media, on my YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so you can keep up to date on everything that's happening with me.
When does Mark get downtime?
Well, it's been very difficult for me. My father died the first week in November, and it was very crushing. So I've spent a lot of time with my family. I would not consider this to be very relaxing time, because as mediums, grief doesn't bounce off of us. But I will be eternally thankful that I was there, and my siblings and I, we took care of my dad 24/7. We did not move him into a nursing home or a facility. He had cancer. We took care of him, and hospice came in to help, and I can't say enough good things about the people who work with hospice. And it was very profound, Julie, when he left his body, because the room actually got brighter. And I'm not the only one that noticed that. There were half a dozen people there. One of them was my mother's friend, Nancy, and she's a medium, and we saw his spirit leave his body. And wow. Within an hour of that, it was very devastating, and I went off by myself, and I am not afraid to admit this, to cry. And I was sitting there, and I was crying my eyes out, and suddenly I looked up, because I got that tingly sensation, and there was my mother and father standing there. And the cool thing is, Julie, my dad looked like he was maybe 22 years old. My mom looked like she was maybe 20, 22. They looked like knockouts. Dad was wearing his Navy uniform, and they were giggling and laughing, and then they started to, like, spin, like intertwining, and it increased in so fast that it turned into this bright, like, copper to silver to bright white light, and then whoop, like that. And I'm sitting there, the tears stopped, and I'm like, oh, my God. And then I went to try to tell my family, my brother's like, I don't want to hear this now, you know, because he was, you know, dealing with grief in his own way, and my sister wanted to know, and other people wanted to know, but they came through to me pretty quickly to let me know that, hey, everything's fine. And on one hand, that's wonderful. On the other hand, it still hurts to lose someone you love. Especially seeing that someone as brilliant as my father, a NASA engineer and a Navy SEAL, be deteriorated the way he was by cancer. But I will say this about Dad. He was a Navy SEAL to the very end, and he went down fighting. So God bless you, and Dad, I'm so proud of you.
And I know we caught up just before this interview, and I passed on my commiserations and love to you for your loss. And I know that I speak on behalf of everybody listening as well, Mark. There's nothing worse than losing somebody so close to us. And I know that all of us and our listeners send you all the love that you could possibly want to need at this time. And it will take a long time, you know that. And we said before that mediums They feel pain, they feel hurt, they feel grief, they feel loss, they feel anger in the same way as anybody else does. And just because we know that there's something more, there's something better, there's something following this physical carnation of ourselves, it doesn't help when we lose that person.
It does, and we have to grieve. And Julie, I'm glad that you brought that up, because everyone has to grieve. It doesn't matter who you are. And, you know, one of the things that my father taught me that I'd like to share with everyone is a real man is not afraid to say, I love you, and a real man is not afraid to cry for those he loves. And for too long, men have suppressed their feelings and their emotions, and all it does is generate a lot of misdirected or poorly directed anger. And that's very unhealthy. And as my dad was a tough guy, as he's as tough as they got, but the one thing I used to love seeing is when he'd scoop a little baby up in his arms and love that baby up, and that's how he was as a father. So there's nothing wrong about showing your emotions if you're a man, because that doesn't denigrate you in any way. It makes you a better person.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Well, it's been a year roughly since I last spoke to you, Mark, and I'm really pleased that your spiritualism, your psychic ability has gone from strength to strength, and you're doing your own thing, and you're able to help educate other people, and certainly with your second Evidence of Eternity book and your new book, bring in that scientific basis and theory concerning life after death and help us to bridge the gap between science and psychic ability and spiritualism. Clearly, very sorry to hear of your father's passing, but hear your conviction and what that's taught you and what he's brought to your life and how much he has supported you, and that comes through, and the warmth for him comes through. So I really hope we get to spend some more time together again.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
I think it's such a, you know, you've got so much to offer people, and we every time we speak, we touch that kind of tip of the iceberg. But the scientific side of things is something that I've not explored personally in my own mediumship, so I'm fascinated by it. So I'd love to speak to you again about it.
Absolutely. I look forward to next time.
And I'll await the invite, so don't you worry. I will check my email on a very regular basis.
Super.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
Has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.